As always, you can reach me through my website, which is thecountrywriter.com, where you can send me a message or you can buy one of my books, including my latest book, which is a book of puns called Puns for Grown People. This week on the podcast, I'm very excited to have our guest, Lenora McWilliams, and she is an author. She is also an Arkansas native. She actually still lives there, unlike me. I'm in Texas now. Hi, Miss McWilliams.
Hello, I'm doing well, thank you.
So you wrote a book. It's called A Sharecropper's Daughter. This hit home for me. Some of my family were sharecroppers. My mother chopped cotton. For those who don't know the hard work of a sharecropper, tell us what a sharecropper is.
Well, what I remember a lot is that we got up very early. My dad woke us all up before daylight because we usually wanted to be in the field by the time dawn cracked. So we got up early. There was always a crowd at the breakfast table. We all ate together three meals a day. I was the youngest of eight children born to my parents, and two of them passed away at the age of two from some unknown disease back then, and without being diagnosed, they thought it probably was something like diphtheria, but they lost two that way. And the six of us remaining were able to work, and we had to work. I think back then most families had a large number of children so that they would have a crew to go to the field when they needed them. And I think the country life and the life I lived was the example of how other people should have grown up. I was happy in my situation most of the time. Sometimes the male siblings in the family gave me a rough time, but we all worked together. When Daddy put us in the field, he kept a sharp eye on us and taught us all the birds and the airplanes, and we saw everything that moved while we were in that field, so we learned a lot there.
What years are we talking about here that you were working out in the field? You said you were the youngest of eight. You're one of six surviving. What years do you remember working out in the field?
I was born in 1937, and I started to work carrying the water can about when I was 6 years old. I wasn't big enough to chop and pick cotton, but I carried the water can and made sure everybody had a drink.
When you say you worked in the field, was it primarily or only chopping cotton? Is that what everyone was doing?
Well, it came by seasons. There was a corn season and a watermelon season and cotton season. And cotton season, of course, came in the fall. I was about six when I first started picking cotton. And they made me a little short sack to hang around my neck like everybody else had. And I didn't pick a lot of cotton, but I sure learned a lot there. I think my sister, who was 4 years older than me and next to me in line, could pick 100 pounds a day, and that was my goal, but I don't think I ever reached it. My sack would get full, but I didn't pack it down. I fluffed it up to make it look like it was. I was full of a lot of tricks like that.
My mother does not have fond memories of chopping cotton. Tell people what it was like to chop cotton. It was very hard work and hard on your body and hands.
Yes, chopping to me was harder than picking. It came in the spring, and when the cotton seeds sprouted and came up, usually we had planted them way too thick so we could measure them out to the thickness that we wanted the plants to be, how close together we wanted them to be. And so chopping was getting rid of some of those extra plants. Sometimes transplanting them where there was an empty place. And Daddy taught us everything about it. And he 1 year got the award for the cotton harvesting for that region. He brought it in earlier and had better cotton with less trash in it than some of the farmers did. So he got the award, and that's when I got my first taste of bologna and cheese. We stopped at a store and he rewarded us with bologna and cheese for supper that night.
My father used to call bologna center cut round steak, which is
I've heard it called a lot of different things.
Yeah, and I think bologna is probably the best name for bologna. You wrote A Sharecropper's Daughter. This is your first and only book, correct?
Started on another one. I have a few pages started on another book that will not be exactly like this one. I'm writing about some of the things, I think, important changes that have been made in my lifetime. And it'll take a while, but Lord willing, I'll get it one day.
Well, let's talk about A Sharecropper's Daughter. You wrote this late in life. How old were you when you started this book?
I was in my 80s. It took me less than a year. I started in January and ended in July. I was pretty steady during that time, using my eraser a lot of the times, but since it was my first one, I did have a lot to learn.
So you actually wrote the book with a pen or a pencil?
With a pencil. And my daughter did the typing for me. I wrote the book for three people, my three children, my grown children. And I intended for each one of them to have a copy. But by the time she got it typed and her brother, older brother, got hold of it, it was in Amazon being printed. And I wound up with 100 copies at my door, so that's how Sharecropper's Daughter came to be. Thought it was going to be for my children.
Well, I'm sure glad your son did that, because I bought a copy and I've actually read your book, and I have to tell you, it reminded me a whole lot of my family. I was born and raised in Arkansas, and many of the same stories that you tell in your book were very reminiscent of the same stories that my mother would tell, or even my grandmother would tell. One in particular, there's a story about you. I think you went down to the river. You were talking about going to the river. Tell us about that.
That was Sunday afternoon, our enjoyment of the week. We worked all week long, unless it was stormy or something. And on Sunday, after we went to church and ate lunch, and Daddy would say, "Who wants to go to the river?" And boy, that would cause a lot of excitement in our house. The river was nearby. We walked everywhere we went. We had no transportation except walking. My mother never went. She was sick all my life. And somebody had to stay with her. But the rest of us, we'd take turns staying with Mama, and the rest of us would go to that river and stay all afternoon and cut off pants that the boys had worn out, or something like that. None of us had a bathing suit, so it didn't take us long to get ready to go to the river. And, oh, we had such a good time. And that river was very cold. It was Little Missouri River. And it's still visited by many, many people in the summertime especially. It's a popular spot around here.
Many great memories going to the Little Missouri. We called it the Little Missouri.
Yes.
I remember going up there. You said earlier that you felt like everybody should grow up the way you did. Was it the hard work that you're talking about when you say that?
At the time, I just thought we were the happiest people in the world, and I thought every family was like us. I didn't know that money made such a difference in families until we went to a country school and we walked there 4 miles every day and 4 miles back home. And all of that was so much fun. Of course, being the youngest, I had no responsibility much. But then when they consolidated our school and we had to ride a school bus about 5 miles into Prescott to go to school, it seemed like it was worse than what the children have gone through with integrating our schools between the blacks and the whites. It seems like integrating wealthy and poor families was much worse than that. We were bullied. were accused of bringing turnip greens for lunch every day and things like that that really hurt deep inside. And we thought that we weren't good at anybody until they moved us to a city school. Well, it was a town. It wasn't a city, but it's a small town. And we got our eyes opened as to how cruel children could be to other children. But we outdid them. We hung in there, and all but one. I had one brother drop out because of bullying. He was in the seventh grade. He just had had the bullying and the farmer stuff until he couldn't stand it anymore, so he dropped out and started working in the log woods. I'm proud of all of my family. We all turned out to be workers.
The book is called A Sharecropper's Daughter, and the author is with us today on the podcast, Lenora McWilliams. The book is available at the website farmhandscompanion.com. Farmhands Companion is a YouTube television show that is hosted by one of your children. Tell us about Pa Mac.
Pa Mac is Gary, my youngest son. We had two children, about 13 and 10, and thought that was all of our family. And the Lord blessed us with Gary. And he is a memorable child. He's such a sweet son. He's full of love and just always outgoing. He's a minister and pastors a church. And he also does anything else anybody can mention. He just can do anything anybody suggests. He tries, and he's willing to try. He's a dear, dear son. And at one time when I had a fall in a gravel pit picking poke salad, he was with me, and he lay about, or stood about 12 feet above me. I was down in the pit where I had fallen, and he stood there and said, "My only mama." And they all laughed at him because he was full of one-liners like that we'll never forget. He's a dear, dear person, and I'm glad you have come across him.
I certainly am, too. He and I seem to have a lot in common. Tell us about your other two children.
My older son, John, is a science professor. He teaches in an academy in, I believe it's Providence Academy in Rogers, Arkansas. They've been in Oklahoma for, I don't know, maybe 20 years and just moved back to Northwest Arkansas. And he retired, but then he started teaching the first year he was back. So he is a minister also. He does a lot of seminars on creation articles and things of interest in, along that line, creation versus evolution. And he stays pretty busy. He has three children, and let's see, one of them is a science professor also. We have lots of teachers in our family. They're numerous, and I'm so proud of that. We managed to get all of our children a degree. Or they manage, not us, but we helped them along the way, and we're proud of that. I worked as a nurse through most of their growing up years to help get that college degree. That was our aim. And so they all have used their degrees well, and I'm proud to say that they're not lazy people. They're all working for the Lord a lot and in their jobs also.
Tell us about your daughter.
My daughter is sent from heaven. Everybody needs a daughter. Her name is Margie, and she lives 10 miles from us where the boys are away from us. And she worked 30 years as a nursing home administrator. She's especially gifted with caring for people. And now she retired to raise her five grandchildren, and so she's still busy right now, taking on the job with an income tax preparation place. So we've taught them all to work, and they work most of the time.
You think that comes from the work ethic that you learned from your father out in the fields? And what was it specifically about your father that you remember that instilled the kind of ethic that you've carried with you through your life to pass on to your kids?
wrote a short essay about my father one time, and to me, he's the most contented person I have known up to this age. I'm 85 years old, and I think my daddy was tops among all the men I've ever known in my life. When I think of honesty or integrity or all of those good adjectives you think of, I think of my daddy, and I can see his smile to this day and hear his voice. He was very tender with us, but he was a disciplinarian. When he gave us a certain look, we knew to sit down or get up or whatever situation we were in, we knew to change it. And we did. He passed away at the age of 70. And to this day, I can get up in the morning and see if it's daylight. I'll raise up in bed to see if it's daylight yet, because I'm in trouble if I've slept past daylight. So I'm not abiding by that anymore, but I still need to know every morning if it's time for Daddy to wake us up. And I can't wait to meet him again. All of my family have gone on to heaven. I'm the only one left out of my immediate family. And I can't wait to meet them. And I'm wondering, my sister, who was always being funny with me, is probably telling them, I told y'all she wouldn't come up here. So I don't know if she's waiting for me to come or if she thinks I'm already past due.
So your son Gary is the one with the website farmhandscompanion.com, which has a general store on there. He actually owns a mercantile store in Caddo Gap, Arkansas. So you can look at some of the pictures there about that. But he also sells your book on the website, farmhandscompanion.com. He goes by the name Pa Mac, even though his name is Gary, and it obviously is a tribute to one of his grandfathers. Tell us who that was and why the love and the affinity for that one man.
Exactly. Gary was very small when he got to know his grandfather for a short time before he passed away. The grandfather passed away, but there was that honor there. His grandfather was in a nursing home part of the time, and we visited every day. And Gary was the first one in that room every time, up in the bed with his Pa Mac. He held much esteem for his Pa Mac. He was his fishing buddy, and, you know, that gets any boy excited. And before he went in the nursing home, he did spend a lot of time with Gary. And Gary was the only one not in school yet at that time. And so he has a special bond with his Pa Mac. He, too, is waiting to jump in Pa Mac's arms again. So my husband was an only child, very the opposite of my being one of eight. And he was raised on this farm where we are now. So he knew about farming. And before the times of motors, there were no motors in the field. We didn't own a motor of any kind. We owned mules. And they make a noise sometimes, but it was not because they were started. It's just another whole book to talk about the mules, but I won't get into that today.
So the book, A Sharecropper's Daughter, covers growing up as literally a sharecropper's daughter. What is your next book, and what's the focus of that?
I don't have a title yet. It's just going to be about changes in my lifetime. I wrote about acquiring electricity in my first book. And this will be along that line, but it'll be different things, such as interstate and some of the changes we've had made since I wrote up until I had children in the other book. And this will be times with my children and changes in the world situation during this time that I have witnessed myself.
What words of wisdom would you want to pass on to the generation that's coming up now?
Be a little more conservative and be a little more humble. I think in my childhood, humility played a big part in doing what you wanted to do. We never walked up and told a teacher what we were going to do. We asked, may we do so and so. And I hear that it's not that way, at least in my small vicinity around here. I would have more reading and writing in the schools if I could change it. More hours of school if I could change it, instead of fewer. So, I could change the world if I just could snap my fingers and do it.
Well, if everybody buys your book and reads it, maybe you can head it that direction.
I'm not much of a politician. I just kind of frown at the things that are going on in the world today. I just think it's in a pitiful shape right now. If I could change that, I would, but I'm afraid I can't, so I'll leave it alone.
Well, there's a lot of great stories in your book, A Sharecropper's Daughter, that could do just that, and I highly recommend the book to you. Our guest on the podcast has been Lenora Daniel McWilliams, and we thank you for being on with us.
Thank you so much for calling. I've enjoyed it.